It's 4 o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone today. This episode on Point. I'm Don Allen with my co-host Ron Edwards in Studio A. Mr. Edwards, how's it going on this kind of cloudy?
I'm real good, Mr. Allen. In fact, I see on one of our studio phones someone's trying to call us even on the line. I imagine trying to get a feel. Overcast, kind of overcast day, humid day here in Lord have mercy, the Japanese have just scored against Germany in the Women's World Cup, defeating the host country. Oh, my God, what a disaster for Germany, and how happy we have to be for the Japanese. I got to tell you, Don, soccer, of course, is a big sport around the world, and I got to tell you, this is a colossal upset. We're looking at it on monitors here in Studio A. Japanese just scoring to go one up on Germany, in Germany. They're playing the World Cup in Germany, and everyone had expected the host country, if you will, would be in the finals. This is for a spot in the semifinals. Boy, this is big. Wow. This does something to the Aryan thinking. But anyways, I guess we got a lot going. A lot of big money coming in to the tornado relief situation. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Edwards. We have a lot of money into the tornado relief, over $1 million granted to a few agencies here this week. Some of them were a repeat, and some of them got money for the first time, like the Northside Community Recovery team, which they were pretty happy about, and pretty interesting. And in the show here, we're going to go over, I guess, and talk
now,
about...
Now, wait a minute. The Northside Recovery Team, who are they?
The Northside Community Response Team is the team led by Major Lewis King of Summit Academy.
But no, that's not the first time, Don. I have to correct you here on All Points. Now, that's not the first time Major King United States Army Artillery has received funding from the Minneapolis Foundation. They received funding on June 1 to the total of $206,000. And we've been talking about it here on Point for the last month and a half. Once we uncovered it as investigative bloggers, so that's really the second or third time that they've been funded.
Yes, you're absolutely.
Yeah, we want to make sure we have absolute clarity and transparency.
Yeah, but
the document, in fact, the document was issued on June 3rd, mm-hmm. called Status Update, and in fact. The Northside Tornado Recovery team was doing from 30 to 50 houses under in an agreement with Urban Homeworks and et cetera, and a member of their core group. You know, they have a special core group, a very internal, secretive internal committee that really handles the money.
Yes.
And we had talked about that here on Point because we had been sitting as at least de facto members of the committee, and yet there was never any reports. There were never any minutes, though they'll probably falsify them. Now, I was greatly disappointed by the Minneapolis Foundation not demanding transparency as it pertains to that first amount of money. But no, this would be the second or third piece of money for the Lewis King committee.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they made a nice piece of money. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that concerns me while I have it up on our screens here, Mr. Edwards, is the some of the grants, and I'm just going to go over just the categories. First, you have the small business, which was $35,000 that went to the Northside Economic Opportunity Network, better known to us as NEON. And a little troubled by that because, I don't think some of the agencies have learned there's a big difference between business and nonprofits. And
when you give money to a
nonprofit, it will never reach a business. And as we know in North Minneapolis, it will hardly build capacity for a business.
And that's an important feature that you've certainly shared with the listening audience here on Point for over a year. If you don't have capacity, it doesn't make any difference how many couple dollars you get.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you there. And, I'm looking at the board members, and I'm actually looking at the Neon's IRS 990s from 2009.
Now let me say something on that. We are aware upon a examination investigation has been going on because we heard this story about how Neon had a grant writer who allegedly wrote the grant when, in fact, the grant was actually written by MEDA, the Metropolitan and Economic Development. I am aware that a representative of MEDA in an electronic intercept, by the way, indicated that that Neon was not incorporated until this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they weren't incorporated, and so I'm quite sure they can clear it up. I mean, in fact, who are their board members? Why don't we make sure we publicize who their board members are?
Let me get right back into the board members. I was just there, and let me just get back. I'm over here in the other studio. I'm using two computers. Oh, here we go. The board members. The president chair of the board is Mahalio Tamila, T-E-M-A-L-I. Wesley Walker is the treasurer. That is, now, mind you, these are 2009 990s, the latest ones they have filed on GuideStar. And we'd like to thank the folks at GuideStar for providing us information on all the agencies that were granted dollars.
Absolutely.
Yes. And Sherry Pugh Sullivan, secretary.
Oh, former head of the former organization known as NERC, Northside Redevelopment, Residence Redevelopment. Yes, yeah, okay.
Okay, and then we have Eric Nathanson, who's a board member.
Okay.
Sarita Turner, board member.
Is she still at Harvard? Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. She didn't make it out there. That's right. She's is she back in the city, or is she in San Francisco, or where?
I haven't seen hide nor hair of her. So I mean,
okay.
And then you have Michael Wynn.
No, she's a board member though.
She's a board member according to 2009 990s, and they filed a 990 EZ. And Michael Wynn, who is also the president and CEO of Emerge here in the Twin Cities.
Okay, kind of interlocking relationships.
Yes, exactly. And so.
Okay, interlocking. Okay.
You're looking at again. I want to remind our listeners locally, nationally, and internationally that I'm viewing the 2009 short form that was filed, which showed the year-end assets here. Let me just get back up there to this of. $36,699.
$36,000, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the income for the year is $234,009.
Okay.
And that's what it shows. They have professional fees and other payment to independent contractors was $28,000. Printing publication runs about $1,000, and other expenses.
What about communications? Do you have anything for communications?
I guess that would be professional fees and payments to independent contractors, which is line 13, which was $28,632.
Well, they're down now. Well, let me get this quick because I'm looking at information here in Studio A, in the big books, because. Just a couple days ago, they were in some kind of consultation, and they indicated that they only had $15,000 in communications money. But they just were awarded a sum total of, is it $230,000 that they've received here in the last 12 days?
It's actually $200,000 from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which is commonly known as DEED. And
then $30,000 from the Minneapolis Foundation.
$35,000
right?
from the Minneapolis Foundation, yes, sir.
Okay. So they basically cut $13,000 from their communications budget, right?
Well, that's what it seems like here. I don't know exactly what's going on here, but it just said, and this mind you again, Mr. Emerson, this is 2009, and they have not uploaded the 2010 the GuideStar yet.
Well, now that's a violation of state law. That's a penalty. They were supposed to pay a penalty in both November and they were supposed to have received a letter in April because they are almost 2 years behind, right?
Well, if GuideStar is kind of a self you know, if people want to come to it and register their agencies and put up their 990s, this is not to say that they did not file their 2010 information. I'm just not showing it here on
And I understand it, and we want to be transparent, if you will, and act with integrity. So they just haven't gotten around to filing it. Okay, all right. But certainly they have augmented the $238,000 that they showed in 2009 with at least an additional $230,000 as an outgrowth of the tornado, right?
Yes, yes. Exactly.
And MEDA really did a beautiful job of putting together their proposal.
Yes,
because it was MEDA that put together the proposal.
Yeah, they did.
And I would assume it was MEDA that put together their proposals back in 2009, 2008, 2007.
Oh, sure. I would have to agree with that 100%.
Right. Now, does Neon show, could we give their full name again, Mr. Allen, because I've got mine on another screen. Full name is what now?
The Northside Economic Opportunity Network.
Yes, right, network. Now, now, what area will they be located? Because I'm hearing that they will be operating Laurie, which is way up on the far northern end, and upwards towards the city limits to the north. They won't be doing anything really. And aren't they located on Broadway?
Yeah, West 1505 West Broadway.
Yeah. And my understanding is that they've already indicated they will be basically doing their operations of economic development and whatever north of Lowry,
mm-hmm.
and in the Lowry network, if you will. The same area where the streets and everything were widened and all the black businesses up there were forced to relocate, right?
Yes, exactly.
The same Lowry, okay? That same Lowry in North Minneapolis. Black businesses were forced to go out of business because they had to widen the boulevard, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay. And then at the same time, they unfortunately had to close down the Lowry Bridge because there was significant defects. Oh, that's right. The Lowry Bridge was the one that Major Louis King had a significant contract, allegedly, and then it was found out he didn't, right?
Yes, it was. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Because I think this time last year we had the gentleman who does research for, what is it, Springbrook?
Springbrook.
Lynn Chisholm?
Yes.
Brought it to our attention. Anyone that wants to confirm that and et cetera can certainly go back to our on-demand I'm pretty sure, Mr. Allen, it was June of last year that Mr. Chisholm called in and was talking in terms of the Lowry Bridge fiasco.
Yeah, we'd like to wish Mr. Chisholm a happy birthday today also.
It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. Chisholm. Yeah. By the way, Don, let us give the number so that we have the necessary transparency here.
Yes, you're listening.
On Point?
Yeah, you're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios in downtown Minneapolis. Our phone number for you to call in is toll-free, 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. And we're listening to On Point, providing you some of the best community programming in the Twin Cities. And
sir, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Now, what are the salaries, by the way? The core staff. Well, what were the salaries for 2009?
They actually filed, Mr. Edwards, a 990 EZ, which is not. It asks for key employees, but on this particular EZ, they are within the regulations and the rules by not listing this. Other than Mr. Grover Jones being the organizations and the books are in care of him. But the salary is not listed on here. And then they are within, you know.
The parameters, yeah. Okay.
To do that on this particular form. So it's a short form. And, you know, in 2009, they really didn't do a whole lot coming off the 2008 UROC fiasco where there was FIPSI money available for the University of Minnesota where they asked Neon or the black community come up with a entrepreneurship or some type of program for black youth, and the best thing they could come up with, nothing was original, so they went to a 4-H program and kind of.
That's right. I well remember that. But then later on, they brought in a couple of community advocates. In fact, is that not the place where Kenya McKnight was brought in a year ago, right?
Yes.
To work with the urban youth, as we refer to them, right?
Yes, sir.
Kenny McKnight, okay, who ran for political office. But there are no, so the, well, maybe we'll get that in the 210, certainly the 211, but the 211 won't show up until 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what other organizations we have there? Because,
well,
boy, there was some good payout to any number of organizations. What about New Jordan Life Hub? They look like they're beginning to get themselves together.
Yeah, they're going to get themselves together, and I'm actually in communication in Studio B with GuideStar, and the next one they have sent me is the Pillsbury United Community.
Oh, let's get with that one. I'm well familiar with that. By the way, I was, in fact, I am president emeritus of the Pillsbury United organization. A lot of people don't like to talk about that, but yours truly is president emeritus.
Okay.
I was key with respect to the merger of Pillsbury Settlement Houses and Northside Settlement Houses a long time ago. But go ahead. What does that look like? That must be that.
We look at an organization that at the year end, let me get there, net assets, fund balance, subtract line 21 from 20, at the year end was at $4,300,000. So they were looking pretty
fast. How much now?
$4,300,000 going into 2000.
Okay.
Yes.
That must be, what, a couple million short of what the Urban League? Because the Urban League is at $2 million, right?
Yes, yes. And so, yeah, they have plenty of money. And mind you again, the latest one that has been uploaded to GuideStar is the 2009, but I think that it's important that we work off of 2009 and move forward, because here you have probably 15 directors from Idris Muhammad, Joanne Harris, Paul Cribbenow, Reverend Craig Lewis, Kurt Lieberman, Steve Holtz, Neil Nickerson, Jeanne Schur, Linda Donaldson, Susie Shala.
This is the Pillsbury United Board?
Yeah, this is their board as of...
okay, in 2009. Okay, got you.
Yeah,
okay.
Buddy Shaw, Carol Baster Benner, C. Paul Carver.
Carol Batsell Benner. Yes, yes, with the Public Defender's Office. Gotcha, okay.
Todd Hartman. And at the time, you know, Anthony G. Wagner was the president, withdrawing a salary.
Officially known as Tony on the north side. Yes. What was his salary?
$171,000 a year plus another $45,000 for whatevers.
So he was
well over
about $216,000.
Yes.
Yeah, $216,000. Okay, so, boy, that was a nice piece of money. Now, is it going to be anything different that they're going to do this time around that they didn't do in 2009 with $4.5 million on hand?
Well, their mission statement says to build a strong and independent community filled with people who are able to build for themselves and their families a life reflective of their own values, interests, abilities, and who in turn contribute to positive development of others.
Okay. Now, Pillsbury United has probably $25 million in land assets. You know that, don't you?
No, I did not.
Yes, they have at least $25 million, starting with the facilities that they now are in, facility up on Fremont, but facilities, the Brian Coyle Center over there with the Somali community, the Pillsbury United Theater there on Chicago, that longtime theater, where former Councilman Ralph Remington used to be a actor along with Rambo. So they have about probably $25 to $30, $35, $40 million in land assets that they control.
Yeah, and here we go. Here I'm looking at calendar year public support, calendar year beginning in 2009, gifts, grant contributions, and membership fees received looking at $43,579.
For Pillsbury Community United?
Pillsbury United Community, yes, sir.
Okay, so when the tornado hit, they were certainly being able to play with as much as $50 million, right?
Yes, I would
okay.
Assume
okay.
That.
Okay, and
right
so the Minneapolis Foundation, as a part of a benevolent commitment, gave them, what, $35,000 directly in the 260 money, and then Pillsbury United will be able to dibble and dabble in the $240,000 that's under the direct control. Well, it's actually under the direct control of the Minneapolis Council of Churches, right? Bruce Bork.
Yes, Bruce Bork.
The principal there, right, Mr. Bork. Yes. Was Mr. Bork, does his name ring a bell with me? Oh, was it SES monies that he was involved in a couple years ago?
Council of Churches, yes. That rings a bell here also, Mr. Edwards. It definitely does.
Yes, Bruce Bork. A contract for $134,000 with what was the organization called? Front Street or Back Street?
I think it was Front Street.
Front Street, right.
So it could have been Back Street.
Yeah.
Bruce
handled all that SES money. That was a part of the relationship with the Minneapolis Public Schools and all that, right?
Exactly. And the Urban League, you can't forget to throw them under the bus.
Well, they were the fiscal agent at the time. Clarence Hightower was the president of the Urban League, and I well remember that the Urban League was the fiscal agent, like the Greater Council of Churches is the fiscal agent for – they're the fiscal agent for – the Northside Tornado Committee, right? There's so many names out here now. In other words, Major Lewis King's operation, military operation.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. Let me ask this, Don, because I'm looking at some materials over here. In fact, I'm looking at as I'm waving it to you, a column written by me and the Spokesman Recorder in January of 2006. Who's handling the mental health money, by the way?
I can't tell you. I don't know. I mean, would that be Bruce Bork and his crew at the Greater Council of Churches, Minnesota Greater Council of Churches?
You know, I'm trying to figure that. I know that there's been real criticism, real negative criticism of the black community by Major King and the core committee. Here's what's being said. And the reason I bring this up, because right now we're going to go to empirical data that is on file in a number of places. I'm going to a statement made by the beloved mayor of our city, R.T. Ryback, at the National League of Cities. In fact, it was entitled The State of City Leadership for Children and Families, always looking out for the little children of color. And in 2008, if you will, along with Dr. Seskin of Northwestern University, Mayor Ryback talked in terms of how they were controlling the violent Negroes here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yes,
in fact, let me read it, if I could, for our listening audience, if you will. Again, this is from the document entitled The State of City Leadership for Children and Families, issued by the National League of Cities Institute for Youth Education and Families. Copyrighted 2009, issued in 2008. But one of the things it says, Minneapolis has successfully reframed youth violence as a public health issue. Remember we talked about that a little bit last year,
yep.
Mr. Allen, and we were criticized by some of those who are now members of the core committee of the Minneapolis Tornado Committee. And we talked this time last year about the fact that there was a lot of money being routed in to deal with the mental health problems of the African-American.
I remember that exactly.
Yes, sir. And I went back into the archives, and I pulled up the speech by Mayor R.T. Ryback. And this goes back to a special commission that he put together in 2006, for those that are out there to think that we have forgotten here. And he appointed a special committee to begin to look at Negro youth violence as a virus,
yeah.
And mental illness, if you will. And so I'd reason the genesis for the question here from Studio A. I was wondering who is going to be handling the mental health money.
I have no idea. That'd be very interesting to follow that through and see what happens.
Yes, yes, yes. Because let me ask this question again. The number if anyone has any questions of us or et cetera, because what didn't you just discover that there are a series of therapeutic workshops going on at UROC for the devastated African American families?
Well, of the
tornado,
Mr. Edwards, let me correct you on that. It's not
yes,
even.
Sir.
It's not even for the family. It's for healthcare professionals.
Are they in training? Are they being trained for something?
It's for training for healthcare professionals that want to come in and learn how to deal with families in the community. This was a really quick and I asked a pretty strategic hustle that they got together and, you know, to get people in and to talk about the professionals to talk about what was going on, because I'm actually in the studio and I'm looking for this email that I need to pull up because it's kind of a little bit set back, and because, you know, they said scholarships available, but they're still going to charge $10 at the door. And if I could just...
And they're charging $10 at the door at the University of Minnesota's UROC Research Center at Land-Grant College. They're charging people to come into a workshop.
Yes.
$10 at the door. I didn't know that that was a proper policy as created by the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota, because there is no accounting of that cash money, is there?
No. No,
that seems to be a violation of policy initiated by the regents of the University of Minnesota at Land-Grant College here in Minnesota a number of years ago. That doesn't allow for good counting practices. But anyways, who are we as blacks to even, you know, question that?
Well, this is part of the you know, Kiwanis Community Church got some change to do from the Minneapolis Foundation to do some things. And, I mean, you can't be really upset with Dr. Bravada to go after this. But, you know, it says join Kiwanis Community Church and the host of Community Partners all-day conference called Tornado Tears and Trauma, a conference on recovery, resilience, and restoration. Saturday, July.
Let me ask this question, and this is for, again, our listening audience, both domestic and international. The reason I'm troubled by that, Mr. Allen, is that any role that the university plays or allows to have played in their facilities is a violation of the exclusionary rule, and that is an agreement they have with the legendary and notorious Dr. Dante Cicchetti, who handles and has special preference, if you will, to all matters pertaining to mental health problems within the African American community. Are you aware, or do you remember Dr. Cicchetti, Dante Cicchetti?
Yes, I do.
Brought here from Rochester, New York, 2005. Again, we would call people to review our column in the January 19th, 2006 edition of the Spokesman Recorder, and then we would call you to review the November 2006 speech given by Mayor R.T. Ryback, if you will, in which he talked in terms of this, and then his his presentation to the League of Cities. Because here's what I'm understanding, Don. They tell me that this mental health situation, which certainly engaged itself and became a topic of significant conversation amongst the Northside recovery team when Major Louis King began to talk in terms that the African-American community had a mental problem that needed to be addressed. Now, Dr. Cicchetti, as early as 2005 when he was being interviewed for the position at the University of Minnesota, talked elaborately of what he had done. And I don't know if we have anybody out there that knows how to even access it per se, but his long 10-year relationship in Rochester, New York, at Mount Hope Community Clinic, if you will. And, in fact, Dr. Cicchetti and his work is identified in the excellent novel entitled Medical Apartheid, put together by an African-American woman a couple years ago. Excellent book, excellent piece, if you will. Now, I'm just saying to you, Don, that it is significant dollars have already been committed to this proposition. And you know, one of the things that is disturbing, the black families that these folks are talking about and educating themselves on have already been told that if they do not adhere to the directives as it pertains to being involved in these programs, they will lose their benefits.
Wow.
Yeah, they will lose their benefits. And There's a number, a figure that's already
been
in play. But I don't know, maybe there's no interest in the community with respect to what this means. It means therapeutic sessions. It means medicines and et cetera. That's why the genesis from this studio on who is going to be handling the mental health monies.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to find that out because, I mean, they started the mysterious. From what I know, they started this a couple of years ago, even with the University of Minnesota, UROC, embedded in North Minneapolis, to research why a community like North Minneapolis has been dysfunctional for so many years. And part of that is that they look at, from what I've read and talked about and have conversations with different folks, is they look at the disease being the people versus looking at the disease being the leadership or the spokesperson.
Okay.
Which would give them a broader base to do research on and then go back and based on that research, the broader base, which would be the disease, i.e. the people, they can go back and get funding to study the people while bypassing the core, I should say, of what's going on. So again, Mr. Edwards, this applies my Gilligan's Island theory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have people that come into the community, study it, take from it, by means of grant and funding to research it, leave the area and never send back any help, i.e. the Gilligan's Island syndrome. So
right.
If you weren't born in the 60s, listeners, you know, Gilligan's Island, Google it, go watch the episodes, you'll love it. But this is just one of the many different disparities because I was having a great conversation with a potential gentleman who might run for Congress against Keith Ellison in 2012, and to remain nameless right now, but we'll have him on the show eventually, Mr. Edwards. But, you know, I had talked to him, and I just said, you know, I don't know what the challenge is or what the issue could be with why, you know, the leadership has not made sure that some nonprofits has closed their doors. And I don't say that in a negative way at all, Mr. Edwards, because, I mean, how many years can you be in business solving poverty? Okay. If you
Well, when it comes down to the fact that your check, your livelihood, you know, the new cars, the Bentleys, the Cadillacs, and houses out way out in the suburbs and lovely wooded areas, is dependent upon you keeping your constituency, you know, poor and pregnant and barefooted. I mean, how much passion, how much incentive do you have to come up with? Oops. A positive, effective solution.
Yeah, exactly. I remember his name escapes me right now, and I apologize, listeners, for this, but he's Ernest Johnson. His name didn't escape me. Ernest Johnson used to be before Clyde, what is Clyde's last name? Took over at Sabathany.
Big Clyde Turner. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Big Clyde Turner. Before
Clyde, Ernie Johnson, we called him. Uh-huh.
For Ernest Johnson, I went and did an exclusive interview with him about poverty and what Sabathany Community Center was doing. And Ernest Johnson said that his greatest day would be when he could shut the doors and go home. That people had food on their table, that people, they could pay their rent because they had jobs. They could get jobs. And he says, you know, when we're no longer needed, that would be my day. He says, my best day in my life. He says, until then, you know, we have to be here. But at least I have to say on Sabathany Community Center that we have, they have services that just are incredible as far as, you know, if you're hungry, there's food there. If you need a pair of shoes, there's shoes there. If you need a jacket. And, I mean, everything. And so they've been doing a great job for a long time. But then, Ms. Edwards, and don't mean to drift off too far, but when we talk about solving poverty and mental illness piece and all that, I have to look at agencies like Northway Community Trust and our friend Gary Cunningham and his boss, Kevin Walker, and the group of the African American Leadership Forum. Okay,
uh-huh.
I have to look at them and say, okay, solving poverty to me as a layman who does not work for a nonprofit means that you change a situation for an individual or some individuals. You change the situation so drastic that they never go back to where they were. It's kind of like the Pentecostal church being born again, being new. You know, you're born again. You don't go back to them evil ways. Don't let me start preaching up in here now. You don't go back to them old evil ways when you're born again, Christian. Now, and I'm going to relate that or use that analogy to solving poverty. You want to make sure that these people are on a path to success, that the mental illness piece, the housing piece, the job piece, the education piece, all those things are fixed and moving ahead. But what we have here is a perpetual funding machine that funds and funds and – I mean, if you just – I'm looking at these 990s, Mr. Edwards, and Guy starts hitting me up every 2 minutes here, and I'm getting just a terrible headache because – if this money was going into a business sector, whatever business sector had would have been solved yesterday, last week, or something, you know?
By the way, do you have OIC's 99?
I am.
Has that come up yet?
That's the next one on queue here, and I am actually going to go into the file right now and see because they are sending me. I sent them a list, and I said, just give it to me one at a time when you have them, and. And someone's actually working on the weekend in customer service there. And we appreciate the people at GuideStar.org.
For providing that.
Yes.
But let me do this. I want to make sure that we publish again here on Point this afternoon. Because I have to tell you, Don, I'm a little bit concerned that the Minneapolis Foundation allowed this mental health hustle to go down. And the reason is that a document that was discussed within the Minneapolis Foundation, there was a gentleman by the name of John Bunting, B-U-N-T-I-N. On May 5th, 2008, he wrote one of the most provocative reflections of the master plan that was being put together by people like Mayor R.T. Ryback and certainly Dr. Dante Cicchetti, and it was entitled, it's a position paper, it was entitled, Is Urban Violence a Virus?
Yes.
And when you start hearing those kinds of references, see, that's what leads to quarantines and, you know, almost a mentality from the old South, if you will, where black families were split up and torn apart. But John Bunting, in this document, again, the date was May 5th, 2008, Is Urban Violence a Virus? And what had happened is that I'm aware, and I know the Minneapolis Foundation and the United Way is aware, that there has been intense discussions since actually the days of Murderapolis that one of the ways to address the threat posed by African-American youth and African-American community is to begin to put them in a clinical situation, if you will, and that's really what's going on. They got equipment down there at UROC to begin the examinations and et cetera. And, you know, I'm deeply troubled by this because this is really a step beyond gentrification. This is a step towards genocide. And, you know, a lot of black folk need to understand that right now their names have already been put in the computer. They have been identified and designated for displacement, if you will. And I, you know, when I see military types such as Major Louis King, United States Army, artillery, domestic intelligence, when I see that kind of activity going on, I know that we in black America and particularly in the black Twin Cities are in big, big, big trouble. And it's really a sad commentary. And I just don't know that we're going to be able to get a handle around it. But I wanted to make sure that's published. Go ahead, Don.
Hey, and Mr. Edwards, before I go on, we have a caller. I'm going to see if they're still here on the line. Hello, caller. You're live on air. Who am I speaking with? Hello? Hello, caller. There you go.
Yes, I'm just
listening. Oh, geez. Hey, please call back. I'm sorry you didn't answer soon enough, and I hit the Xbox on you there. I apologize.
Yeah, let's see if we can get them back. Go ahead, Don. You have some reflection. Go ahead.
Yeah, caller, please call back. But again, where I left off, Mr. Edwards, is that you have all this. There's no new rebirth. There's no, like, the African American Leadership Forum or Summit or whatever they're calling it nowadays is, you know, their concentration is a blueprint of action. I mean, how many more times can we look at slick magazines and printed paperwork, just like the city of Minneapolis does, that has all this fancy stuff on it? I mean, it's good, but it's not going anywhere. Our caller is back. Go ahead, caller. Hello?
I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. I will let you listen then. Yeah, you crawled in there. Hold on. There we go. He's just listening. Okay, but anyway, it's just shocking to Ms. Edwards to see this, the, number one, the perpetual funding with no solutions, no legitimate outcomes, and the people that should be at the table aren't at the table, i.e., you know, I've never seen a Northside community response team meeting with homeowners, with insurance adjusters, with insurance agents, with public works people, you know. Well, I guess they did come to a couple meetings, but, you know, and people are having a really hard time, especially, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, in North Minneapolis with that particular topic. You know, while we sit here and build capacity through funding, through independent capital campaigns and for Northside Community Response Team and the Minneapolis Foundation, you have people that are insured that are having hell of a time because there's no one to talk to. They're not being addressed, and again, you have situations that just aren't being rebirthed or solved, or no solutions are given. Let's talk about real quick here too, Mr. Edwards, since we're kind of I'm kind of going that way before I lose my thought here. Is that on Monday the 11th, we're supposed to miraculously have 150 kids, summer kids, us kids in the summer here working on summer jobs, summer youth.
Mm-hmm.
And this was put up on the table by the Minneapolis Urban League, Scott Gray. And, I invite callers, you can call in again. Our number is 877-572-4288. That's 877-572-4288. But you know as well as I do that, well, the Urban League doesn't really have any summer programs, and where are they getting the students from? And that's a question. You know, that's not
they don't have any.
And if the students are coming from somewhere, shouldn't the whatever organization that brings the students in get the money? You know, and so it doesn't really make any sense. And
let me say this, Don. Let me also do this. I need to make sure publish so that we deal with any folks who try to ask, you know, what it is we've been doing. I want to call for the record the attention. You know, it's ironic. I was just again looking at the archives. Really, a week ago, a year ago, this coming week, in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, July 14th, 2010, Don. I wrote a article entitled, Please, We Need Help Here. And I would suggest for those that are interested that they go to the archives, go to my website, and call that column up, if you will. And many things that you're saying now, of course, we were saying then. And we were in our third month here on Point, and we talked about that. We were saying the same things. And see, what bothers me that I know that people like Major King and others, many of those who are members of the so-called core group, were in fact criticizing us in different circles, maintaining that we needed to be silenced, that these were not things that were relevant or mundane to the well-being of the African, if you will, the sons and daughters of the African. And now here we sit around talking about this whole scenario, including a significant move being made to deal with and to restructure the African-American community by using the boogeyman expression of the black community has mental health problems. And I think you had found a document earlier today in which a noted expert had talked in terms of the problems that come with the kind of disasters, but that a community has already been confronting those disasters for 60 or 70 years, and what that does. You know what I'm saying? And so for those callers that are out there that this time last year, when we were predicting that we were in trouble, we needed help, if you will, we needed our agencies, be they Pillsbury United or OIC or organizations like that, to step up, you know, and do the job they had been well paid for. You know, we were slammed, we were slammed badly in many respects. One other point I want to make, and this is for the fiasco that goes on inside the committee. You know, Major King has been talking about we need to find the 5,000 people and et cetera, Don.
Mm-hmm.
And I maintained silence purposely because I thought maybe these people would go get the document that would tell them. And I just want to refer those people that have an interest of acting with dignity and integrity and honesty and transparency. The city of Minneapolis on April 1st, 2010, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke. Remember that week, because you and I were the only individuals of color in that meeting, per se. The final report on City of Minneapolis 2010 census preparation and outreach. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff Schneider, who was the Minneapolis Community Planning and Economic Development Director, laid out a very elaborate document. Maybe it was too many pages for people to read. It was 95 pages, maybe. Because I remember Lewis King said to us that he has a detention problem. He can't read beyond the line. I mean, that was his statement, not ours. And I keep hearing these reflections about where the 5,000 families, sometimes they can't get it right. Sometimes they have 5,000 people. Sometimes they say 5,000 families. The fact of the matter is that the census report prepared for the Minneapolis City Council and the federal government on April 2010 laid out what was happening. And so I don't know why we once again are engaged in this dialogue other than a 36-month plan, right?
Right.
Okay, because we haven't talked a lot about the 36-month plan. Because what these organizations are saying is that they will need 36 months and probably another $3 or $4 million to find out what the problem is. Now, some of them, like the Urban League, have been in business for over 80 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
OIC has been in business for over 40 years. In fact, I find it ironic that Major King carries the same name as the man that actually developed and made OIC a power in this community. The Reverend Stanley King. I don't know if you used to hear about him when you were
young. Yes, I did. Yes, sir.
The Reverend Stanley King. In fact, there was also a Coleman involved with that group. And then there were people like Joe Buckhalter, Dan Fauché, and others. And they had headquarters which were surpassed what Mr. King and OIC is in now in that building there on Olson Highway. So I'm saying all this to say I'm not understanding why we're talking to ourselves about we need to find this, that, and get an understanding, and et cetera. Now, back to what you had said, Don, I hope people understand that $450,000 is being expected to be paid to OIC and the Urban League to allegedly create these 150 jobs for young African-Americans who will work on our public works projects. Now, Mr. Allen and I for a year have been just wailing about the fact that these same leaders do not confront Mayor R.T. Ryback. I saw a so-called leader when R.T. Ryback was in the last meeting a couple weeks ago actually almost kiss his behind and called him one of the greatest mayors in the history of this city. Mr. Allen and I have in front of us right now documents called the disparity report. The city of Minneapolis doesn't hire black people. They don't give contracts to black people.
No, they don't.
I just can't understand. Well, I do understand. I'm saying it only for the purpose of radio. I just can't understand for the life of me why we've sat around and played these games that we don't understand why it is that if African-Americans are having stress, that there's clearly a reason for it and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that they're mentally sick and, in fact, should be, quote-unquote, wrapped up and made to disappear. But any calls, anything, Mr. Allen? Because I thought we'd be getting some supporters of the Minneapolis Foundation's 1.1 $1 million donation or etc. No one seems to want to approach this.
Yeah,
I wonder why.
Yeah, it's hard to figure that out. But Mr. Edwards, in a commitment to news, I'm in here with Studio B, and we just had something come across the wire, and I would like to get this out to our listeners. A U.S. Army veteran who lost his legs while deployed in Iraq, died after being thrown 200 feet from a roller coaster at an upstate theme park on Friday. James Thomas Packhammer, 29, was ejected from the Ride of Steel roller coaster at the Darien Lake Theme Park Resort, located between Buffalo and Rochester, at about 5:30 their time in Genesee County. The Genesee County Sheriff's Office said so. This was a gentleman who served the country and ended up coming back.
And this up in my part of the country. That report comes out of upstate New York?
Yes, it does, sir. Between Buffalo
my
and Rochester.
God. Yeah. And Buffalo and Rochester. Yeah.
I'd like to thank MSNBC.
Okay.
Or delivering that here in real time to us so we can get that out. That's going to be on the 6 o'clock.
And again, it doesn't even compare, but for the purpose of international politics, just an update about 15 minutes ago, Japan defeated Germany 1-0 on penalty kicks. And boy, I tell you, it's a dark day in Germany right now as we speak, because it is night in Germany, if you will, in the fatherland, you know what I mean? But, back to what we should be talking about, if you will, the tornado efforts, if you will, tremendous amount of dollars. Now, let me ask the question. Your estimation, Mr. Allen, how much of the $1.1 million that has been given to the powerful, the very powerful Northside Tornado Recovery Committee, how much of that was for administrative costs and how much of that actually goes to the people?
From the budget that we first got, Mr. Edwards, about 2 weeks ago, it's administration heavy. There was a line item in there for $25 for emergency assistance. But of course,
$25,000, yes.
But without seeing the actual written proposal,
that's right. We didn't get that, did we?
Well, I got the old one, and I can't read garbage these days. I'm kind of like Mr. King with reading books.
Well, you said you only read a line at a time. Right. Okay, yeah. I got you.
And so I looked at the first couple lines, and you could tell if you've ever authored a grant or written a letter to your father to borrow $20, you know that this particular package put together was bad from Jump Street. And so whatever they handed back into them, because if you notice, Mr. Edwards, to get the money, they have to change people from navigators to case managers or care managers.
Care managers, yes. Care manager assistants, wasn't that CMAs?
Yeah, something like that. And so, I mean, you're looking at it, and, I mean, the whole thing for me was kind of cheesy, although I'm not, this is no negative reflection on the Minneapolis Foundation at all, because they did put their foot down and made them come back with something, you know, that was relevant. And they obviously.
But, Don, I have to say, I hope that your faith in them, because I just don't have that at this point. And my reason has a lot to do now with the benefit situation and the fact that Sandy Vargas was the county administrator and county assistant administrator at the time that the Jachetti plan was put together. And I'm just bothered by the fact that she did not take time to really analyze what this is really all about and why Major Louis King began a very serious criticism and attack upon the African-American community as being mentally deficient, if you will. And that was so dangerous, particularly in light of the fact that King and others knew and know about the Jachetti Project. But I hope that they do that. Now, I think we need to, operating out of your studio, we need to share with the listening audience the safeguards that we were told by Major King and Mr. Bork and Ms. Jones of formerly of the African American Family Service. We need to share that with the public. We have an obligation here because we don't want to be one-sided. And Mr. King gave us some materials, basically all from 2005-06, which was interesting on how OIC reports its revenues and expenditures. Am I correct?
You are correct. You are correct.
Could you just share with us, I mean, what is your observation of this?
My observation is that they're attempting, and there's several points I got to make during this, because there are some systemic breakdowns in this process. Because, first of all, what they want to do is they want to have a solid accountability for billing for people that are providing services. And the system that they're setting up is a system that, okay, you invoice us, okay? The invoice would allegedly go to the core group. And then from the core group, it will go to the Accountability and Transparency Committee. Okay? On that committee, since Lisa Jones, another individual, and a woman by the name of Lisa Marie. I don't have...
And Alfred Flowers. Isn't
the
community activist, Alfred Flowers? Isn't he on that committee also?
Yes, he is. And so with that said... me personally being a business person and you being a business person also, Mr. Edwards, I don't have much faith in that transparency and accountability team as it stands, because I've talked to people that said they went to that meeting and as soon as they got there, Ms. Jones and her colleague walked out and canceled the meeting. And
yes,
so,
right, and there was any in-depth discussion. And, in fact, we are under a restraint on the – Tornado Committee by orders of Major Lewis King, that there can be no discussion. I think he uses terms like coming out of the weeds and ambushes and et cetera, which are kind of military terms, but I can understand that, having also known well about the war colleges and et cetera. So what the listening audience needs to know is that these questions cannot be asked in the meetings of the full group, if you will, because you're told that that has to be asked at so-called subcommittee meetings. What Mr. Allen has just pointed out is that people who are already not a part of being designated and authorized and authenticated and certified by the core group, you come in, the meeting is canceled. By the way, with the financial piece that you have there in Studio B, who is the core group? You know, I've had a number of people call me. In fact, they said, well, who are the core group that you and Mr. Allen keep talking about? Do we have any indication? Because I've never seen a document that said this is the core group.
Yeah, I don't have a list of the core group because it changes daily, I think. But I've been told, and I can't confirm or deny this, but I've been told that on the core group since Mr. Lewis King, the Reverend Richard Coleman.
Major.
Major King, yes.
You need to remember what we were told.
And Reverend Richard Coleman of the Sanctuary, Reverend Jerry McAfee from the State Baptist Convention, Steve Wynn, if I'm not mistaken, from Emerge.
Chad Schweinfeld, or whatever his name is, Urban Homeworks. Who is doing isn't he doing the certification for the colored contractors?
Oh yeah, that's what's been told, that he's going to be doing the.
Well, he got 10,000 the first time around.
Yeah,
he got
10,000
on June 1st to do certification, 50,000 for some other activities, and then the list that nobody wants to talk about anymore. And then there were 30 to 50 houses that the Northside Tornado Committee was doing. I see the committee has done allegedly 30 houses, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So the financial piece, I apologize to you and to our listening audience, because you were walking us through the maze that will take place. Now, let's say United Pillsbury does some activities and work. Let's say they give out packages with, let's say, $500 food debit cards, new clothes, and such things as that. So after they do that, they then put that together, and then they submit that to who, Mr. Allen? I was a little confused.
For
reimbursement.
They submit that after it leaves the Transparency and Accountability Committee. It goes back to the core group to be then perused over again and then submitted to the Greater Minnesota Council of Churches and Bruce Bork for payment.
Okay. and then a check is issued. Now, I have to indicate, because obviously you and I are on different pages with respect to the Minneapolis Foundation. You're certainly trying to give them respectability and et cetera. I'm having a trouble. I'm struggling with this now, particularly in light of the mental health hustle that's going down. But how does the Minneapolis Foundation indicate at this hour that they will be able to authenticate? Because, you know, one of the things that no one has in this situation, do you realize there's no audit committee?
No, there is no audit committee, but then again, Mr. Edwards, they don't have to audit anything because the fiscal agent is going to have the money. The fiscal agent is not going to have to bill Minneapolis Foundation for a nickel because the Minneapolis Foundation is going to grant them the cash. It's just going to be a minor bank transfer, and then that money is earmarked for the Northside community. I can't even remember, response team. And so, with that money sitting in the bank, with the fiscal agent, now the fiscal agent is responsible for getting a report to the Minneapolis Foundation and to the core team after money's been put out. But, you know, as in contracting, I mean, I've seen bids for contracting where someone has tools there, and it might be $30,000. And that $30,000 could have went anywhere.
Well, like you mean, back on the 27th of May when the minority contractors' representatives, Thor, said that they had taken significant amounts of monies out of their pocket to do repairs and et cetera within hours after the tornado. And we're continuing to say that as late as the 11th and 13th of June, when in fact they had received some portions of the $206,000. Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean. And I think we have another caller here. Let's see how they've been holding.
No, let's get them in. Let's see.
Hey, you're live on the air, 7935. Hello.
Yeah.
You're live on the air, sir.
Yeah. Have you guys done any hiring for this tornado thing?
Who, us?
Us?
Well,
we don't have any legitimacy, and we're not funded. But to your question, sir, the hiring, when you say hiring, you mean to hire people to go out and actually work and make money and be paid a salary?
Yeah,
Minneapolis Urban League and OIC say that they're going to put 150 to 200 young African-Americans, or primarily, to work on... Mr. Allen, correct me if I mistake this. On Monday, the 11th day of July, sir, they will put 200 African Americans to work on public works projects. They apparently have signed an agreement in principle with the city of Minneapolis. I wasn't quite sure how regulatory services got in, but with the Public Works Department, which does not hire black people, and that what basically is going to happen, these young African-Americans will be working for $7.25 on jobs that the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis pay white workers as much as $25 and $30 a cent. Does that make sense to you, sir?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I mean, so I want to be so clear that the Urban League, OIC, Urban Homeworks, by the way, and certain minority contractors will be hiring and placing on public works projects under the auspices of the Public Works Department of the City of Minneapolis. They'll be out there working. They'll be out there working Monday afternoon, Monday morning, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
So do I call OIC for a job or what?
Yeah, I would suggest you call. Well, first of all, you have to go through the numerous committees that are set up. So I would suggest that you call over at OIC. You asked for either a Major King or you asked for Mr. Coleman. If not, you have a problem there, then you should get the phone number of Urban Homeworks or the minority contractors, or visit their satellite there on the corner of Broadway and Penn. They have a satellite up there, and in other words, they have a trailer.
Trailer, yeah.
And you go in there, and I guess they will direct you back downtown to the Public Works Department, where you will get the job information. And the key piece, sir, is assignment. where you'll be assigned to work in North Minneapallis. So,
yeah,
Mr. Allen, are we correct here that we assume that all of that's in place based on what we've heard over the last 3 weeks, right?
Well, that's what I assume.
Now, if you have any problems with any of that, sir, you need to make a direct appeal to Mr. Scott Gray at the Minneapolis Urban League because they have signed the agreement. In fact, I'm told, I'm not at liberty to go into great detail, but I'm told that Mr. Gray was asked to confirm the agreement and was asked for a copy, and I guess they're still working on the print, if you will. But to your question, sir, there are four or five different places you can go. They will then direct you to the Public Works Department of the City of Minneapolis, where if you want work, though you sound like you may be a little bit older, because we're basically going to be, you know, they're going to be employing youth. What was said to us, Don? 17 to 20, 21?
Yeah, I think it was 17 to 21 years old. They want 150 youth, and we're looking for that.
Right. And your salary,
sir,
would be...
Navigator, sir.
Oh, no. That money is already spoken for, sir. That money is already spoken. That money is under direct control of two or three agencies, and Mr. Allen talked about that right at the top of this program. That would be Pillsbury Community, Pillsbury United Communities, the Hub, Shiloh International Ministries, and there's one other place that we've been told. So the navigator jobs are already taken.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, you may be able to contact Mr. William English, who apparently is special liaison now at Pillsbury United. Is that right, Don? Is that our information now? William English, formerly of City Inc. You remember City Inc., sir? Well, no, you're out of town. But City Inc. Went under here in January, but William English was a powerful administrator there. He's now apparently employed over at Pillsbury United. So we've done the best we could for you, sir. We've given you the directions. And if you're looking for work, I suggest you start calling some of those numbers as soon as you get off the phone.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Interesting question. A person saying, can they get work?
Yes. They're
John,
they're...
I think we were fair.
Yes.
In our response, because we were merely telling what we've been told, right?
Yes.
Now, if you could, because it's too important what you taking a look at, the payment pieces. Now, the foundation is saying they're going to watch closely. I have to ask the question, how? How are they going to ask closely?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's another important, there's a lot of pieces here that aren't being put together. Aren't being put together, that are just not shared with, you know, and this is a strategic. You have the lieutenants and captains and the colonels and the generals in one room and the majors. Then you have enlisted folks out there that get information on a need-to-know basis.
Okay.
And so,
by the way, just so that you remember, there will be purging of the committee, and the Minneapolis Foundation needs to know that because they will help. They will vote on that. Oops. Because they will have a vote in the committee. Some of us will be purged from the committee in early August. Major King has already indicated that if the determination is made by the core group that you don't bring anything to the table. And when he says that, it basically is the amount of monies that we weren't supposed to tell this either, were we? But the amount of tribute, again, the word tribute, a neo-colonial Christian term, that he expected from the agencies at the table that received money. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
You're correct.
Mr. King expected, and in fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Minneapolis Council of Churches immediately said that they would pledge $2,500 to the $25,000 that is needed as immediate seed money. I never could understand what that seed money was for.
Yeah.
But they already had $5,000 because the State Baptist Convention had pledged $5,000 the previous week. And the Minneapolis Council of Churches pledged $25,000, so they're still $17,000 short. And basically Major King indicated that he expected the groups like Emerge and Neon's, you know, they expected those groups to kick in a nice piece of money, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, isn't that pretty close to extortion?
I would have to say it's right there looking over the cliff.
Yes. Without brakes on the Humvee,
yeah,
if you will. Yeah, on the military Humvee. But, yeah, we want to be transparent. If anyone has any questions, you have the number. Mr. Allen, if you just shoot it out there again, anyone has any questions about the fiduciary integrity? Because Mr. King said, and he was talking to Mr. Allen and myself when he said he's sick and tired, and he went into his Amos and Andy pantomime. He said he's sick and tired of hearing people talk, where the money? Where the money? Tell me where the money's at. And I thought, oh, Major King's a comedian.
Yeah, and the person that usually does that wasn't in the room. Anyway, our call-in number is 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288, and you're listening to On Point. Mr. Edwards, I just received the 2010 Summit Academy OIC.
Okay.
990s. Louis J. King II, CEO. I'm sorry, that made me cough. $168,420 with another $11,000 in extras.
Okay, so he's at $179,000, and I think he told us that even in his golf tournaments that he annually raises, and I know many of you sports fans, Mr. King told us that at his last fundraiser, his golf tournament 3 weeks ago, he raised $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
He told us he raised $200,000. So his salary is about, with benefits, is about $177,000.
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right then, okay.
Yeah.
What was their overall, around 7, 8, 9 million?
Let me go back up there to the top here, and I'm just going to scroll up here real quick to the top. Okay, these forms. This is not an easy form, so I need to look gross receipts. $4,275,000. Those were the gross receipts, and they went into the current year, which is 2010, with $2,157,063. If I read that right, yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so we have at least two organizations that had. Well, actually, one, Pillsbury United, had assets of approaching $50 million, but administrative cost of around 4.5. Mr. King is over there with certainly around 4.1. So you've got $8.6 million worth of administrative assets and et cetera, salaries, benefits, those kinds of things, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And these are organizations that certainly have been in the forefront of providing opportunities, and as the last caller pointed out, jobs and such things as that, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So why was it that none of these organizations reached into their own asset banks and made donations even before the United Way and particularly the Minneapolis Foundation? Do you think that maybe that would have been helpful and certainly would have encouraged a more significant Minnesota Nice donation, if you will?
Well, I think so, but now what I think they're doing is I think they got the money from the Minneapolis Foundation, and now they're starting their own internal capital campaign, as we got privileged to be entertained to with on last Wednesday's meeting, as that we were both in, Mr. Edwards. I say, who's gonna donate that, where you actually told them that the Baptists, whoever they are committed.
State Baptists had already donated $5,000 the Wednesday before. Apparently, Major King had forgotten that, but that's important because it's also important what Mr. Allen just said on this program, and that is that with $1.1 million already in hand in the bank account of the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, that now that they are talking about a capital fund drive.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, there's something about that I looked in a little deeper. The only money that the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches is going to be the fiscal agent of is the money from the Northside Community Response Team. Okay?
Okay, so that's $440,000, right?
Exactly. So
at 7% administrative fee for the Council of Churches, correct?
Yes, you are actually.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking here in studio at computers and books. Oh, okay. So the other $600,000, that's going to go to who? Oh, that's right. You know, we never were able to answer the question, and Major King and the core group never would answer us when, and then, of course, we would be referred to as Negroes that had a mental health problem. When we asked who was the fiscal agent on June 1 when the Minneapolis Foundation gave him the $206,000, do we ever know? Did we know? Could we speculate?
I have an idea. The way the secrecy went, I'm pretty sure that the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches was the fiscal agent at that point.
Okay, so that means the Minneapolis Council of Churches, under the leadership of Bruce Bork, is handling and getting fees of 7% off of about $646,000.
Yep.
206, and then the $400,000, right or whatever. Yeah. So there's another $400,000 that kind of is floating out there.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe the Minneapolis Recovery Fund was the fiduciary or fiscal agent for the remaining money.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, those questions aren't really being answered in a forthright way. I mean, you know, Mr. Edwards, what it's going to take is, you know, they're not answering a whole lot of questions for me, for you, a couple other folks that are in the room. But, you know, let the mainstream get a hold of this. Because what I feel, you know, I know you're having a little challenge here with the Minneapolis Foundation, but
yes.
I think it's great that the Minneapolis Foundation, for the first time in 30 years, an agency has told up front who got it, when they got it, and how much it was.
Okay? Yes.
And they put it online. So come 3 months, 90 days, between now and the end of the year, we're going to give them a benefit of the doubt. If things haven't changed, if we're hearing the same old stories, then we really have to dig and ask some different questions.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's out there. It's out. You know who got what and what they're doing with
mm-hmm.
it. And I would like to see Mad Dads with their $10,000 do a little bit more than be on the corner with that loud music over on Broadway.
Well, now, that we brought that up. We have certainly sufficient time. We have about 13, 14 minutes. I'm $10,000 for Mad Dad. What was it that Mad Dads did? Do you know?
Mad Dads, what did they do? I'm just going to go back to the other computer here and actually pull that up because I was tickled. Okay, I was really tickled. Let me just get there. Northside Community Tornado Response Team. Okay.
And by the way, has Mad Dads ever filed a 990?
Yes, and I have that. It's from 2009, and we'll get back to that.
Okay.
Mad Dads, $10,000 to provide basic needs, street outreach, counseling, and transportation service to those impacted by the tornado. Is what they got $10,000 for. But they have a really small budget, and again, board members, Derek Emery, John Turnipseed, Barbara Hargest, Jeff Hayden, board chair. That is the same Hayden who is the state representative.
Representative?
Yes.
Is the board chair of Mad Dads?
Yes.
Okay.
Jennifer White and B.J. Smith, executive director, who makes a modest $60,000 a year.
How much?
$60,000. Exactly.
$60,000. Okay. Modest salary. Okay.
Modest, you know. It's
okay.
A little bit under industry standards, but, you know, you got to get what you can work with.
Okay. So they on the occasion of the tornado, they were working the street level. Well, what was happening to the workers that the park board had in the community, particularly in all the parks north of Broadway, that the park board and the city of Minneapolis have received $453,000 in Homeland Security money. That program started in February of 2010, all last summer, all this year. In fact, last night we were kind of on patrol, if you will, in downtown Minneapolis looking for both groups of individuals, the individuals affiliated with the Park Board and the individuals affiliated with Mad Dads, because there was a lot of fighting and violence downtown last night, and we didn't see them. We saw none of these folks. And we've been down there really for the last 3 weekends specifically looking for these warriors of the streets, if you will. So, but anyways, he got $10,000 for their humanitarian efforts on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th of May, and then they've been there thereafter, right?
Exactly. And so,
okay, all right then. Okay.
And although that, you know, I'm trying to figure this all out, their bottom line for 2009, I have 2009 here, was $279,967. So it's basically $280,000 for 2009. And it says Street Patrol Outreach Program. The Street Patrol works in cooperation with the Minneapolis Police Department, and the title implies consists of organized patrols of designated areas of determined by data-driven need and or requests from community members or other stakeholders. The presence of Mad Dads is in highly visible green T-shirts and jackets offers a powerful, comforting deterrent to crime and violence. The youth development Mad Dads facilitates a variety of training and or engagement situations for young people, stressing the importance of education and positive behavior while encouraging youth to stay in school, get out of gangs, and become role models for their siblings and peers. Youth development contributes becoming building communities that thrive not on fear, violence, and distrust, but on mutual respect, personal responsibility, and compassion for one's neighbor, men's environment, whatever that meant.
So that's their mission statement, and I have to ask this question: why is it necessary for them to go out and solicit money? Do they ever go in their pockets to help? And it particularly deals with a specific case of a young African-American woman brutally murdered, shot in the head in front of her home a couple months ago. And I remember Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward, and Mad Dads and others met, and there was a problem with coming up with monies to bury the young lady. And finally they ran out and turned it over to a woman by the name of Helen Williams, who realized that that the financial wherewithal wasn't there, and a Benedictine order of nuns, if you will, or one of those orders of monks, stepped up and actually facilitated the funeral. Does Mad Dads kind of go in their pocket with that kind of money? I mean, that, you know, they give $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 to help with the $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 of costs for funerals for these young people gunned down in the streets of our city. In fact, we had a young man gunned down on Longfellow, 27th and Longfellow.
Yes.
So he appears to have been a Native American. But, okay, I was just trying to get a feel on, because, see, I kind of got the feeling that what we are supposed to believe, Mr. Allen, is that this is a new boom town, a mining town that just got started, you know what I'm saying? And we all came up here to the Ponderosa, and that programs dealing with the social problems, social ills of Boomtown just got started in the last 8, 9, 10 months, right?
You're correct.
Because folks are talking like they all just got in town, and they just all discovered after the tornado that the African-American community was severely affected by obstruction and et cetera, and it's kind of like inventing the wheel, or reinventing the wheel, if you will, you know. So, boy, that's a lot of money that these organizations had in the last 6 minutes that we have.
Yeah,
they came into the ball game with a lot of money. We're not talking about, you know, some rookies that just graduated from college, if he graduated, God bless him, and just signed a big NFL or NBA contract. We're talking about players that have been on the court for a long time, right?
Yes, a long time, to solve those systemic needs in the community while they keep the perpetual funding machine going. Because if those things got solved, Mr. Edwards, they would be probably 5 nonprofits in North Minneapolis.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. What a Wow. You know, well, like I said, opportunity for folks to have called in, raised any questions of Don and Ron as it pertains to the authenticity of the information and et cetera. I have to tell you, and I give a notice that I'm extremely concerned by the mental health piece. I'm concerned about the attacks by Major Louis James King on the mental condition of the African-American community. You know, the man seems to be comfortable doing that in the presence of white folks. It's kind of like a minstrel show.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of entertaining the white folks and telling them how crazy the niggers are. You know what I mean? And I guess at some point during the last three sessions where the black community's mental stability has been attacked, I was kind of waiting for somebody to come in the door with a minstrel face on and a minstrel hat and, you know, buckle up shoes.
Yeah.
And kind of do a old, you know, black bottom. I mean, really, because that's the way that the black community, unbeknownst to them, have been disrespected by this new concern about mental health. And I got to tell you, Don, in closing, that the pharmaceutical companies have made a nice outlay of money available for the, and I remind people again, for the Chiquetti Project. Maybe we can invite Dr. Chiquetti to come to, before I get thrown off the committee, come in and just talk to us about, you know, how you deal with the mental problems of the black community. Oops.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see, I thought we had another call, but we don't. Actually, we do. Hold on, Mr. Edwards.
And it got to be quick.
Yeah. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I just tuned in, and I know we have a short period of time. I'm talking about mental illness of the black community. Well, first of all, to be blunt, nothing is going to be done because it's going to be the same old, same old. And the way the economy is, well, there's going to be more mental health issues with the black community. So obviously no one cares anymore about each other. And because of that, there's going to be more mental health. There's going to be people, black people, that are going to lose their minds because it's going to be harder for them to find a job. And they're going to start shooting people and everything else. So, you know, it doesn't, I mean, people are going crazy because of the economy. It's going to get worse. So, I mean, what's your advice or suggestions, even though, you know, it might not be helpful?
Let me say, and hopefully you may, we will entertain this question again next Saturday because it's that important. There is a process in which you can call this program back up. Suggest you call us back after we go on the air. Mr. Allen will walk you through it. You need to listen to this entire program because we've been actually battling this and talking in terms of what's been happening for the last, 90 minutes, if you will. So I would encourage you to call up on demand on this program and listen to the entire hour and a half program, and you'll get a little better feel that we talked about solutions, but we talked about our concerns with how this whole master plan is at work. I cannot do anything but agree with what you just said. But you see, that's what is driving the hustle, if you will. And Mr. Allen has said it 8 or 9 times on this program in the last 40 minutes, is that so long as there are these conditions, there are those who pry and prey on the African-American community. But give us some thought. Call up on demand. Give us a call next Saturday.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. You know, Don, I hope people call you privately and ask how to get the on demand. The one thing that we have in place, and we're pretty much running out of time, is that Mr. Allen and I made a commitment a year ago as it pertains to the different the technical features of Blog Radio, that any program you want to listen to, call it up and you can hear everything that we said. Everything is transparent.
Yeah. Okay, with under a minute remaining, don't forget to tune in to Black Focus 2 at 3 o'clock tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Edwards, your topic?
We'll be talking about the mental health situation, and we'll be talking in terms of what's really driving, quote-unquote, the need for profit.
Okay, and then tomorrow at 5 p.m. on Minneapolis Television Network, for those of you that live in Minneapolis and have Comcast Channel 17, you can tune in to Black Focus. And, Mr. Edwards, your topic?
We'll be talking about, again, we talk quite a bit about sports, Don. We spend a lot of time talking about the lockout, NFL and NBA lockouts, and the race car that is at play that nobody wants to talk about.
Okay. And thank you. Don't forget to read the Independent Business News Network with IBNNnews.com and Black Politics. That would be Black Politics in Minneapolis. Black Politics in MPLS.blogspot.com. We thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
It's 5:30.
Thanks for tuning in.